During a conversation, the grandfather of a lady present remarked, "You will be surprised at the number of people you will meet when you come over beside us. People that have practically passed out of your recollection." On another occasion, the son in Etheria of one of the sitters remarked to all present, "When you come over here, there is a great joy and satisfaction in meeting with friends whom you have known in the stony path of life, who have stumbled perhaps and gone a little under, but who have always pulled up again and tried to march steadily onwards until the old tenement of clay is left behind, and the spirit, the real man and real woman, emerges to live a nobler, higher and more perfect life." Another expressed the hope that some day the veil will be drawn aside, "And I hope it will be drawn aside in a beautiful way, that will usher each of you into the spirit land beside those you love. May the peace, the joy, which cometh from the great I Am, be in your hearts and minds and your souls today, and guard your steps all through your journey in life, preparing the way to your beautiful home, and making those on this side rejoice in your efforts and successes, and give you a joyous entry into your life on this side." When an elderly sitter remarked that he had not much to live for, a man in Etheria encouraged him with these words, "The world is just beginning for you, my dear old friend. A beautiful world is just beginning. Though your friends are lost to sight, they are just starting afresh in a new and glorious experience of life. You will all have that experience by and by. Don't worry, don't faint by the way. Take up all the little crosses you meet on your journey. Shoulder them nobly. They are the stepping stones to the brighter day and the brighter world beyond, when, duty achieved, labor done, you come home at last. God bless you." Another Etherian had his regrets on reaching the new life. He expressed them to his wife, who was present, in these words, "I wish I had understood this better when I was amongst you. I realize now that I missed a lot. Had I taken the opportunity of mixing with these nice friends of yours when I was in earth life, I would have understood more when I came over to this side." A frequent speaker sent this message to his fiancée. It was passed on to her. "Tell Mary, in a note, someone will transcribe it for you and send it on. Tell her that I am waiting at the Golden Gateway until the day dawns in God's good time when her little pilgrimage is finished. I will be there with outstretched hands to meet my Mary. God bless you, Mary." From John Hardman. Mr. Sloan, the medium, then asked someone in the circle how long it was since Mr. Hardman had died, to be answered at once by Hardman himself, "Not dead, John Sloan, but alive, and I was very much in the land of wonder for some time. I will explain it to you, and I hope you will forgive me for taking up so much of your time. You see, I did not believe in the afterlife, and when I came here I was bewildered with the wonder of the knowledge that it was all true. I did not deserve the kindness showered upon me by those who came to help me. I knew then that I had made a mistake. It is all over now, and I will try to help you, all of you who come here, if the opportunity comes, now and again. I know what it is to be lonely. That is how I felt when I first came over, until some friends took me in hand and led me kindly along. Thank you for your kindness and consideration in listening to me. I will not interrupt you further now. When I say God bless you, it is not a lip service. I mean it." On another occasion Hardman spoke as follows, "It is a long cry from this side to your side, but I call to you now, and thank you, many of you in the lovely surroundings of this home, for the comfort you have given to me since coming to this side of life. I was one of the despondent souls of earth life who had a very poor outlook for the end of life. I went out in darkness and fear, but I was brought to the light of this side of life through the instrumentality of the friends I met in your surroundings, the Etherians who came to the seances. I like the auras which I see surrounding you because I know from the colors that there is not one present who would not help where it is needed, and I say to you there is never a word or a loving thought that goes out to one on our side but it is borne immediately to the soul for whom it is intended if sent out in the right way. You may think they do not hear, but they get it immediately. I did not believe there was life, conscious life, after physical death, but I have found a home eternal. And now I am awaiting the great master's time to move forward in his service. I pray to be allowed to help all those whom I left in the body who do not know this truth, so that they may not tread the path that I trod, but that their steps may be led into the path that will show them the way, as you in this little meeting understand it. Then they will pass out to this side of life with confidence and with joy, and not in fear. I am John Hardman." Then another time Hardman said, "God bless you all. And for every little word and thought which you sent out to me during my stubborn time after passing, which I know many of you sent me who knew me at that time, I say thank you. They will be an embellishment in the homes which the Great Father has prepared for you on the spirit side of life, and for the love and help which you have given to my Mary I thank you all. Everyone arrives in the other world after death, both believers and unbelievers. However, the more one knows about it the less strange and surprised one feels on arrival." During a conversation, this was said by a departed friend of one of those present for the lucid way in which you portray my thoughts, "I thank you very, very much, and for kindly bearing with me, one and all, a stumbling disbeliever. Oh, what will I call myself? I do not really know. I do not know how to put it. But I did not believe in an afterlife. I did not believe it, but could not get away from the thought that there might be something. I very speedily found out that there was something, and something far more real than I ever experienced in my earth life." Another once told us much the same. "I had not thought much about the next world at all in the earth life. I hardly thought about the afterlife at all. Ignorance is no sin, and when the new world breaks upon the newcomer this is what happens." A friend who was speaking from the other side was asked to make clearer something he had already said. "I am speaking of those I meet from day to day, when they find that what they call death is only the gateway into the real life, that the passing from the body means the entrance into a fuller life, with the hope and the assurance of a gradual uplifting to a nobler life and a nobler station. Even the little bit they know is just like a lever trying to lift a large stone. It lets them get a start, easing the burden, so that they can get volition to mount higher. Now that they have passed the barrier, they realize quickly that they have got into a fuller, nobler, and higher life, and that they have the chance of progress with nothing further to fear." One of the Indians, we call them Red Indians on earth, though they are no longer colored red in the other world, who helped the speakers to materialize their vocal organs, once said, "When you are gathered home to the spirit side of life, we will have a reunion. I mean all those we have been intimate with. We are prepared to wait, and all those who have communed with us in bygone times, and helped the Indian chiefs, as you called us then, to find our pathway into the inner circle of spirit life. We shall repay you for your labors, and give you a royal welcome to the spirit side of life when we all meet again." Then on another occasion came the voice of a highly cultured Indian, who was a regular attender at our seances to help our friends on the other side to speak, "God bless you all, and may you, when the journey is ended, and the evening, as they fell on green tree in his earth life too, find the beautiful surroundings of the spirit world to be just as entrancing to you as they would to the Indian chief when he passed over." This is Greentree speaking. Once we were given this encouragement and helpful advice at the conclusion of a talk on poetry: "Just wait until you come to my side, and you will understand what poetry really means. You have no conception of the loveliness of the country wherein we dwell. Take the rough places with the smooth, ladies and gentlemen, and do your little bit while you are in the body. Serve God and help your fellow men and sister women, and all will be well with you when the parting comes. Just think of the friends you have known in bygone days. The loved ones, the specially beloved ones who will be waiting to say to you, 'My darling, come home.' Those of us advanced in years will find help and comfort from the following, spoken by one who was a regular communicator. It was in reply to a sitter who had referred to the disabilities of old age: 'I came to the same time on my earth travel myself, and you are all coming to the time when you will find the difficulties of life coming very near to you, even in walking, and in speaking, conveying your thoughts in the concise way that you would like to do. You seem to lose these gifts for a little time, but they are all returned again on his side of life. Absence from one another in time causes love to become less intense, but it does not die, and will revive when we meet again. I am afraid that all in harmony is a phase which cannot be acquired completely on your side of life. Here we have complete harmony which knows no barrier, that love which never dies. That is one thing God brings into your heart in the earth life, and, if it is true love, it will never die. It may dwindle a little, or twinkle like a star, but at the end of the road, when you meet again, it will be illuminated once more and bright, when the trammels of clay have been thrown off, and you are received bright and beautiful into this glorious land. Once as a séance was about to close, we heard the following. We hope we have been able to bring you a little further knowledge of life on our side and a little blessing to yourselves as well. We are not in a position to do unto you all that we would wish, but we are in a position to open up the path a little ahead of you. Our wish is that in every day of your earth life you may progress in the knowledge of truth, the knowledge that beyond these passing scenes there is the eternal reality. Because, as you all know, you will come to the passing, the demarcation line, when you will say goodbye to earthly things and pass to the more beautiful, lasting, and abiding things of the world which lie beyond, where all you love and are dreaming of will be there at the end of the road. I often think of that which is supposed to be a comedian song. It is one of the most beautiful expressions I have heard. Of course, it was not the friend who sings the song who made it. It was composed for him, and the meaning behind it expresses a beautiful thought. The road may be rough and hard and stony, but at the end all those you have loved, and who love you will be there at the end of the road. I will be there. I will be there. Another time came the name and the voice of a lady, the wife of the medium, a much loved friend of some of the sitters, who had passed on some years previously. God bless you, Mrs. Lang, I just want to come and speak to you myself. It is Nana, Mrs. Sloane. I am remembering the many happy times we used to have in the old days. You are climbing the hill now, Mrs. Lang, and in God's good time, I do not want you to come too soon, but I will be there to meet you with all the others, and we will rejoice, and your dear husband and your dear son will be there also. It is just wonderful to have all your dear ones around you. I have many of mine over beside me, and, of course, I still have my dear old grumbling man on your side, but he does not mean it. Once, when her dear old grumbling man expressed the desire to be free forever of earth trials and sorrows and be with her, she replied, "Yes, I know that, dear. I think most people when they reach your time of life and those they love have gone before them, are anxious to get away, but you must wait God's good time, dear, and then we will meet and be the same to each other as we were in the earth life." Finally, here are three short remarks applicable to this chapter. It is up to each one of you stalwarts to scatter the seed of truth, and see that it, let the world know that there is no death in God's great garden of love. A lady in Etheria, a friend of one of the sitters, after giving her name sent messages to all her family, naming each one correctly, to end by saying the time will come when we will all meet again in this land so bright and free from pain. Once, when a séance came to a close, the medium's son in Etheria said the last words, and they are a fitting ending to this chapter, which comprises what we were told we may expect when we arrive at the further shore. This is Dougal Sloane speaking to you. Good night, Dad. Cheerio, everyone. I will come again, and I will meet you on this side again. Be bright, be happy, and be joyful. In the next chapter we are told about the world the new arrival has reached, and what it feels like to be there. Chapter 8. The other world. Another world surrounds and interpenetrates this world on which we live. It is real to those who live there, but unreal to us on earth. It is invisible to us, but visible and tangible to its inhabitants. Someday we shall live there and, this being so, anything we can learn about it is of vital interest to everyone. Nevertheless, most people go through life with little or no appreciation of the fact that an invisible but very real world surrounds us. To understand how another world can exist and yet not be seen and felt by us, is only possible by those who have some knowledge of physics, the science comprising the sensed and unsensed vibrations which make up the universe. Our sight, our hearing, our touch, our sense of smell. In fact, our entire consciousness of existence is the result of vibrations, because physical matter and an entire physical universe is made up of vibrations which affect our senses and make us conscious of life. We sense these vibrations, and thus they are real to us, but there are other vibrations we do not sense. Consequently, they are unreal to us. But, When we die and use as our vehicle of sense and expression the etheric body, which on earth interpenetrates our physical body, what is now real will become unreal, and the unreal will become the real. The invisible will become the visible and the visible become the invisible. This matter of vibrations is fully considered in my book On the Edge of the Etheric, and the two books which followed it, namely, The Rock of Truth and The Unfolding Universe. But here we are concerned with what Etherians have to tell us from their invisible world of greater vibrational frequency. When I became convinced that the voices speaking to me at Sloan seances were those of living men and women, inhabiting a different order of nature from the one to which we are accustomed, I set about to find out all I could about this new world. Here I now give the information I have obtained at different times over a space of 35 years about the makeup of this invisible world. On one occasion, when I was sitting alone with the medium, except for my secretary who took down in shorthand everything said on both sides of the veil at that little meeting, I put a question. I sat with my ear close to the medium's mouth, his hands held in mine, and the answer came in a man's cultured voice, clear and distinct, from the void and not from the medium. I was sure of that. This was the question I asked: what is contained in what we call space? And this was what I heard: interpenetrating your world is another world of substance in a higher state of vibration to the one you sense. The universe is one stupendous whole, but you only appreciate what you see and hear and feel. Believe me, there are other worlds of substance, finer than physical matter, in which life exists and of which you on earth can form no conception. Connected with your earth is this world to which I came after what you call death. Encircling your world are planes of different density, and these move in rotation with the rotation of the earth. Then I asked if his world was a material world like ours, or a dreamlike mental world, to which he replied, "Our world is not material, but it is real for all that, it is tangible, composed of substance in a much higher state of vibration than the matter which makes up your world. Our minds can, therefore, play upon it in a different way than yours can on the material of your world. As our mind is, so is our state. To the good their surroundings are beautiful, to the bad the reverse." Later that same evening the same voice confirmed the foregoing in these words: "We do not live in a dream world. As I have said, we live in a real tangible world, though the atoms composing it differ from the atoms which make up your world. Our minds can act on this tangible substance in a way yours cannot do on your world. You live in a world of slower vibrations. So you do not live in a world of your own," I said, to which my informant replied, "Everyone lives in a world of his or her own, you do and so do I, but if you mean can each of us see and feel the same things, I answer, yes. All in the same plane can sense the same things. We have the same world as you have, but in a finer state. And you have all the sensations we have on earth?" I asked. "Yes, we can touch and feel, and enjoy all the sensations you do." Then came a long and more detailed statement which reveals how real life is to the inhabitants of Etheria. In clear and measured words my informant gave me a graphic picture in words of life in his world. This is what he said: "All in the same plane can see and touch the same things. If we look at a field, it is a field to all who look at it. Everything is the same to those in the same condition of mental development. It is not a dream. Everything is real to us. We can sit down together and enjoy each other's company just as you can on earth. We have books and we can read them. We have the same feelings as you have. We can have a long walk in the country, and meet a friend whom we have not seen for a long time. We all smell the same aroma of the flowers and the fields as you do. We gather the flowers as you do. All is tangible, but in a higher degree of beauty than anything on earth. Here we have no decay in flower or field as you have. Vegetable life just stops growing and disappears. It dematerializes. There is a similarity here to what you call death. We call it transition. In time, as we develop sufficiently, we pass on to another plane from which it is not so easy to come back to earth. This we call the second death. Those who have passed through the second death can come back and visit us in our plane, but we cannot go to them until we have passed through it also. This is what your Bible calls the second death. Those who have passed through it do not often come and speak to you on earth directly by materializing, as I am doing now, but they can pass their messages on to me, or someone in my plane, and we pass them on to you. Etheria is similar to this earth, but of different substance. So when I asked what would happen to their world if our earth were destroyed, the answer came it would make no difference if your earth came into collision with another star or planet and was destroyed. Our world is quite independent of physical matter. When we come to realize that the universe is made up of vibrations of intense and rapid frequencies, of what we postulate as the ether of space, the foregoing is not so difficult to comprehend. All we see and sense is the physical universe at frequencies of 34,000 to 64,000 waves to the inch, or 400 billion to 750 billion waves a second. These produce the colors which make up the rainbow. That is between the infrared and the ultraviolet, which make up the visible spectrum. See chart at end of book. Beyond this there are frequencies we do not sense which are worlds in themselves, or rather, they make up different worlds called spheres, the surfaces of which are called planes. Mental development controls the frequencies which constitute the etheric bodies of the Etherians. Consequently, as they think, they are. As they are, so is the plane they inhabit, as its frequencies correspond to the frequencies of the etheric body. So we shall now read what was said at other seances on this important subject of vibrations. Our substance, like yours, is just vibration and so is our light. Our substance consists of what is equivalent to your electrons and protons. It is only a question of degree between us. Our substance is vibrating faster than is yours. Each surface reflects the vibrations from the etheric sun with which it is in harmony. Our progress from lower to higher planes is simply an experience of the world opening, as the result of our enlarging minds. When asked about the difference between our world and their world, I was told that with them, the vibrations are faster and finer. This applies to each plane, that is, the higher, the faster and finer the vibrations. And when they wish to come back to the slower vibrational frequencies of Earth, I was told, trees, houses, hills and vales exist on every plane from the physical plane upwards. When we have lowered our vibrations down to the physical plane, we experience what exists on your Earth's surface. The flowers and trees are brighter on our hills than they are in the vales. It is a matter of light. Thus they can leave their surroundings, which are similar to ours, come through their surface, or lose touch with their normal etheric vibrations and appreciate physical vibrations. In this way they keep in touch with what goes on Earth. This is what I was told. We lower our vibrations and pass through our surface. We then adjust our vibrations to those of your Earth. It is easier to get through some places than others, as they have been regularly used, and can be called throughways or highways from our plane to your Earth. These visitations can be better understood when it is realized that the first plane is quite close to the Earth. There is a distance between each plane, but distance does not mean quite the same thing on this side as it does to you on Earth. Moreover, these spheres, of which the planes are the surfaces, move round with the Earth and, like our atmosphere, are always in the same place. This means that our friends and their surroundings always remain above us. Unless they travel to other parts of their world, as we do, to China or Australia for instance, they inhabit a country above, in space, the one they inhabited on Earth. So we are not far wrong if we imagine a large invisible British community in Etheria, which once inhabited Britain, settled above us in space, and the same with the other countries of this Earth. The inhabitants for some time remain settled above the country in which they once lived when on Earth and, so long as the memory lasts, they continue to take an interest in it and its inhabitants. This is what was said. These planes move with the Earth and form part of its orbit. The first plane is a kind of clearing station where the different nations live together. Family life is most important, and the members await relatives of their generation to go on together to the next plane. So far as the first plane is concerned, it does exist above the surface of the Earth. But it is also in connection with the Earth plane. When I asked once if we could think of the first plane as like the surface of the ocean, and the Earth's surface as the bed of the sea, the imaginary water being the substance through which they can travel back to Earth, and we, when we die, reach them, I was told it is true that the etheric planes are above and around the Earth, but the first plane is close to the Earth. The reference to the bed of the ocean can only be accepted as a simile. We have nothing quite corresponding to your Earth vision of the ocean bed, which we can give as an illustration of what your surface looks like when you are coming to us from Earth. How do they see their surroundings? Without light, nothing can be seen. They tell us that they have no night, and constant reference is made to their light. Whence then does it come? That problem intrigued me, and I asked them many questions on this subject. Here are the answers. Yes, we are living just above you and can come to you instantly. We have very bright diffused light, which is very much more pleasant than the light from your sun, as it is not so glaring. Another put it like this: our atmosphere is naturally luminous, and extends much higher than does your atmosphere. On the first three planes there are shadows, but beyond these they get less and less definite as the atmosphere becomes more luminous. Just as there are shadows, so there is shade. And at another time I was told, we have no night here as you understand night. Once at the close of a séance we said, good night, and this is what we heard: there is no night in God's great land of love. Good day, and a bright morning for all of you after your rest. Much the same was said on one occasion during the war: I will not say good night. There is no night where I am, no blackouts here. But if you want sleep and rest, what happens then? I once asked, towards the close of a séance. If we feel we want rest, we can get subdued light, not so subdued as you understand it, but sufficient to enable us to rest. We have no night here as you would understand night. We get our light from the source of all light, but I cannot continue further tonight as the power has gone, so good night, and may the light that lightens all darkness lead you into the light you are so earnestly seeking. To be confirmed on another occasion in these words: we get subdued light, but not so subdued as you experience. But where does your light come from? I asked. We have a sun and a greater sense of its invigorating power than you have of your sun. We should feel very lifeless without it. It is present on every plane, and produces colors more varied and beautiful than are yours. Only a portion of the etheric sun's vibrations are reflected on each plane. We are conscious of those in harmony with the plane on which we live, just as you are of those which are reflected by your plane. Another Aetherian described their sun in these words: we receive our light emanations from our etheric sun, concentric with your sun, whence comes light of great splendor, and this is reflected to our eyes by the vibration of our substance, just as is your light by the vibration of earth substance. The reason for our not having darkness is because the rays of our sun are reflected by our atmosphere at a greater height than are the rays of your sun. This greater luminosity of their atmosphere was confirmed in other words on another occasion: we have day and twilight. Our atmosphere can reflect our sun's rays for a longer time than yours can, so we have twilight instead of night. We do not need sleep as you do, so we do not miss having no night. It seems as if the process of light reflection from their sun is much the same with them as is the process with us. The higher the atmosphere, so is the reflection greater. When those parts of the etheric planes are away from the etheric sun, the luminosity of their atmosphere gives them light. We on Earth experience the rays of the sun of the same frequency as are the vibrations of physical matter, and the etheric sun's rays are reflected on the various planes by vibrations of the same frequency. The sun is emitting vibrations in harmony with the Earth, the first plane, the second plane, and so on. Our atmosphere does not extend so high as does their atmosphere, and its reflection is not so extensive as is their reflection. Consequently, we have night but they have twilight. A much fuller explanation, with diagrams, of how we appreciate the colors produced by our sun will be found in the unfolding universe. Just as our sun sends out rays through the ether which are reflected by the vibrations of physical substance to our eyes, so they tell us that our etheric sun sends rays through the ether, and these are reflected to our eyes by substance. Consequently, like you, we experience colors but they are more brilliant and varied than are yours. Another emphasized this in these words: "We get our light from the source of all light, a great central force. Its brilliance depends on the distance the plane is from this source. And this gives light," which was described in these words: "Our light is soft, radiant, brilliant, beautiful and blending. I have been told that the luminosity of their sun prevents it being seen, but its light produces colors beyond our imagination.